Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Okay, Rod sent this to me. The subject line is saying bugliosi. And he writes down, meaning to be helpful, not critical. Several times last night I heard you say bugliosi. I believe the G is silent, as it is in lasagna. If you address him as bugliosi, I'll bet he'll appreciate you more. Thanks for listening. Thanks for everything. You do a truly wonderful service to us all. Well, thanks, Rod. Bugliosi. Help me remember that, will you? Thanks, Rod. Bugliosi. He'll be joining us in about an hour to talk about his latest book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder.
When you do speak with him, try not to say it quite with so much enthusiasm. Now we have Vince Bugliosi on the floor. It sounds like you're promoting Chef Boyardee or something.
All right, enough of these anti-Italian slurs. I mean, come on.
You know his name was actually Boyardee? The chef, the SpaghettiO guy. Good stuff.
On the program tonight, in addition to Mr. Bugliosi, we have a moment with Bob, and if we get to it, Uncle Mike's Story Corner, both of which are so extremely depressing that when I tell you we're about to do either or both, you may want to turn off your radio, internet service, or however you're listening to us. You know, why is there so much in this program that... My daughter asked me this the other day, one of my daughters, why is there so much on your program, Dad, that is not cheerful? Only she put it a different way. And I said, well, I guess it's because the hope is in talking about these horrors, we, the American people, will not let them happen again. We will not become so disengaged from our political system as we have over the past 25 years that we would allow a near-fascist movement like that of Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and George Bush Jr., yeah, Dick Cheney, to take root, maybe. Maybe that's why we talk about these horrors. I hope so. And we're going to get to the Supreme Court decision today in just a moment. Prairie 2 writes about the disaster in Iowa. Hey, Mike, a cold chill descended on Iowa today, but hopefully Secretary Chertoff, who is out there, courtesy Department of Homeland Security, will leave like the overflow from a flooded sewage treatment plant. The front that produced last night's killer storm was stalled over eastern Iowa and is regenerating dozens of new storms. River levels in Cedar Rapids are currently 12 feet above previous records, and it's still raining. The National Weather Service has given up attempting to predict a crest level. Sandbagging efforts are being overwhelmed. Many smaller towns have been emptied. In rural areas, cows are standing on the porch decks of riverfront houses to try to get out of the water. What did Chucklenut say? Global warming ain't necessarily a bad thing. The cows in Iowa disagree. Tonight, I once again, call me just a glutton for punishment or having masochistic tendencies, but I watched NBC News with Brian Williams, and the beginning of the program, when he promos or headlines what's going to be on the program that night, he said the following: a setback for the Bush administration in the fight against terrorism in the post-9/11 world. And he was referencing the decision 5-4 by the U.S. Supreme Court today. Brian Williams and NBC decided to call that a setback for the Bush administration in the fight against terrorism in the post-9/11 world. Now, if we were exclusively on Sirius Satellite Radio or XM Satellite Radio right now, I would unleash a string of profanity that would blister the ears of a World War II veteran sailor. But that's not where I am. Our mini blog, or my mini blog today at MikeMalloy.com, pretty much lays out my feelings about that decision And as Robert Perry says at consortiumnews.com, there are two ways of looking at this decision today. And by the way, the decision recognizes the rights of habeas corpus, or the rights to habeas corpus of detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And besides, what the hell are we doing in Cuba? Did we get that lease, that perpetual lease, as a result of the Spanish-American War? Huh. So you can look at the decision two ways, as a major victory for individual liberty over collective fear, or, as Perry points out, a reminder that one more right-wing justice could make George W. Bush's imperial presidency constitutional. And, of course, therefore, permanent. Perry says, at the heart of the decision was the court's majority recognition that Bush and his political allies have been playing games with the Constitution by turning Guantanamo into a legal black hole for the indefinite imprisonment of people Bush deems unlawful enemy combatants. So as you know by now, by the narrowest majority today, the Supreme Court rejected this garbage, declaring that the U.S. government cannot evade the constitutional tradition of judicial oversight simply by citing Bush's so-called war on terror and then by placing detainees offshore at a U.S. naval base in Guantanamo. Anthony Kennedy wrote for the court's majority, quote, "The laws and Constitution are designed to survive and remain in force in extraordinary times," end quote. You know, it would seem to me that even someone who is studying high school civics, if such a thing is still taught in public schools, would understand that. Bush doesn't. And these four thuggish right-wing judges, Anthony Fat Tony Scalia is going to vote in support of anything that is oppressive, restrictive, and fascist, because that is his nature. Clarence Thomas, who likes to sit on Fat Tony's knee and pretend like he's talking when it's really Fat Tony, will do anything Fat Tony tells him to do, because Clarence Thomas is as qualified to be a Supreme Court justice as my four-year-old daughter is. That is to say, not. And the other two right-wingers, the ones that the Democrats in the United States Senate over the past 3 or 4 years said, well, you know, we're going to go ahead and vote to confirm Sammy the Fish Alito and John the Player Roberts, but we'll hold the line on other things. This is another in the lengthy list of reasons why the current crop of Democratic Party leadership in the Senate and the current crop of so many of the Democrats is useless, is worse than useless. They are enablers for this psychopathic George W. Bush. And this is why, you know, I say so many times, and probably you agree, I despise and dislike some of these Democrats to a far greater degree than I despise and dislike and would like to punch the lights out of some of these Republicans. I know my enemy. I've always known my enemy. But I expected that my friends, so to speak, would not betray me the way the Democrats have done. And it's not just me, it's you and me, and most importantly, the Constitution of the United States. So damn these people, damn these Democratic leaders, damn them all to hell for allowing two thugs like Roberts and Alito onto an already stinking Supreme Court. With, of course, a couple of notable exceptions. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
No American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
21 past the hour. It's that kind of lying. Just straightforward, to the point, lies. Everything that comes out of this bastard's mouth is a lie. In the ruling today, the four liberals and one so-called moderate or centrist, the five justice majority, in their ruling, they said, quote, the writ of habeas corpus is itself an indispensable mechanism for monitoring the separation of powers. And they added that, quote, it must not be subject to manipulation by those whose power it is designed to restrain, end quote. You know, ever since this Bush crime family stole the presidency twice, but going back to the first time, under the firm hand of this monstrous Dick Cheney, the idea has been, the Federalist idea, to consolidate as much power as possible into the hands of the executive branch, regardless of the intent, the clear intent of the U.S. Constitution. These people don't care about the Constitution. As Bush said, it is a goddamn piece of paper. It means nothing. Now, in assuming the office of presidency, as much of a theft as it was, didn't Bush even so take an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States? Why is this son of a bitch not removed from office? Why? Why? Because of Nancy Pelosi? Is it to protect her political career because she may have had foreknowledge of some of the actions that were going to be taken by the Bush crime family? Is that what it is? Now, I don't want to transfer guilt and blame and responsibility from this amoral thug in the White House to Nancy Pelosi. But if Pelosi continues to insist, in her phrase, that impeachment is off the table, what is a poor, hapless American citizen like me left to believe? I mean, anyone, even someone as uneducated as I am, understands that George W. Bush has repeatedly, and God knows with absolute impunity, coupled with one of the most cavalier attitudes regarding lawbreaking I have ever witnessed, he has repeatedly violated that oath and stomped on the Constitution. This is not a game of nine ball in some local pool hall that this bastard is cheating on. This is the U.S. Constitution. So where's the outrage? Where's the screaming and ranting and raving by those members of American society whose profession has been given constitutional protection to do what is right, i.e. the press? Sons of bitches. They are not ignoring the Bush crime family. They have become collaborators. Collaborators. Back to Perry, he writes, Justice David Souter, in a concurring opinion today, noted that the duration of many of these Guantanamo imprisonments. Souter wrote, quote, some of the prisoners represented here today have been locked up for 6 years, end quote. 6 years. 6 years. I mean, even the detainees that we captured, actual members of enemy armed forces, Italians, Japanese and Germans during World War II were not detained that long. The whole war didn't last that long. Now, keep in mind that John McCain has vowed to appoint more justices like Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito. These four saw nothing wrong in removing people from the book of the living and placing their names in the book of the dead, and to leave them there forever or until some half-assed military tribunal put them in some sort of a mock kangaroo court, denied them access to any evidentiary presentments that may have found them not guilty as charged and set them up for the death penalty. John McCain is willing to appoint more justices in that mold. Is that who you want? I know you incipient fascists do, you Republicans. And I almost feel sorry for you because you don't have a clue as to what I'm talking about. You have no idea. You're a Republican because you don't want to see the queers get married. Or some other half-assed reason. If another Roberts or Sammy the Fish Alito is nominated and confirmed by a Democratic-controlled Congress or Senate, just like these two thugs were, then what would constitute a new right-wing majority would be in a position to reverse even this ruling. This is how close we are. Perry calls it the Republic on a knife's edge. The Republic is us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Bipartisan appointees who themselves were not elected. They hold top-level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts of Kenneth Lee? Oh, it's national security of the public.
Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
26 before the hour, and now, once again, it's time for a moment with Bob. Hey, Mike. The concept behind Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, illustrates what could happen between now and Inauguration Day. The tipping point is the level at which the momentum for change becomes unstoppable. It's that hold-your-breath, weightless moment when the car reaches the crest of the roller coaster just before the screaming plunge into history. I don't know what will happen, but it doesn't look good for our team. The tipping point's moment can only be determined in retrospect, but I'll go out on a limb and say that we approached the tipping point's event horizon on June 5th, when the Senate Intelligence Committee released their report stating that Bush, Cheney, and other administration officials lied the United States into war. ABC and CBS didn't cover the story. NBC spent less than 30 seconds on it. We hit the tipping point dead on 4 days later. Dennis Kucinich introduced 35 articles of impeachment against the Bush regime, and the mainstream media responded with an almost complete news blackout. 10 years ago, the Republicans and the press were howling at the moon, screeching for Clinton's blood. Every day, 24/7, he violated the rule of law, they screamed. But today, the media, the Republicans, and the Democratic leadership stand mute. Each of the 35 articles is inarguably true, horrific in scope, and censored. It is inaccurate to accuse the mainstream media of ignoring the news. They are censoring it. I used to think that the Democrats and the mainstream media were complicit, but no longer. It is obvious that they are collaborating with the Bush regime. The 63 words Brian Williams read about the Senate Intelligence Committee report was written to lead the viewer into thinking that the account was tainted by a Democratic partisan bias. Williams concluded, quote, most of the Republicans on the committee notably and sharply disagreed with some of the report's findings, end quote. What Williams did not report was that the Intelligence Committee findings were old news. As Scott Ritter said in July of 2002, quote, what we have taking place in Washington, D.C. right now is that the national security of the United States of America has been hijacked by a handful of neoconservatives who are using their position of authority to pursue their own ideologically driven political ambition. And the day we go to war for that reason is the day that we have failed collectively as a nation. End quote. Mother Jones Magazine published The Lie Factory by Robert Dreyfus and Jason Vest in January 2004. Quote, only weeks after 9/11, the Bush administration set up a secret Pentagon unit to create the case for invading Iraq. They pushed disinformation and bogus intelligence and led the nation to war. End quote. The media and the Democratic leadership certainly had access to Scott Ritter's testimony, the Mother Jones expose, and watched as millions around the world marched in protest before the war began, but they aligned themselves with the government. The mainstream media and the Democratic leadership wanted the Iraq war as much as the Bush regime. They are not complicit. They are collaborators. The mainstream media redacts or outright censors the news, and the Democratic leadership has taken impeachment off the table. These are the actions of collaborators. That's the tipping point. When the media and the Bush regime actively work against the American people, it is largely because of the media that Americans have a fundamental perception problem. We fail to recognize the Bush regime for what they are. We continually perceive them as if they were politicians instead of gangsters that have put themselves above the law. The House attempted last February to assert its authority, and we saw how that played out. Quote, House finds Bolton, Myers in contempt of Congress. The House voted Thursday to hold White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton and former White House counsel Harriet Myers in contempt of Congress for refusing to testify before a panel investigating the firing of several United States attorneys. End quote. Jonathan Turley, nationally recognized constitutional law scholar, wrote about what happened next. Quote, Attorney General McCasey is essentially saying that regardless of whether a president may be in flagrant violation of the law in ordering aides not to testify, the aides themselves can never be prosecuted, even former aides like Myers. McCasey stated that he will not allow the case to be presented to a grand jury. Thus, by controlling the prosecutors, he is controlling and blocking the legal process. End quote. Turley, by the way, said last Tuesday, quote, we are in the midst of a constitutional Chernobyl where every safety valve in our system has failed, end quote. But we still cling to our naivete, hoping we can get through the conventions, the elections, until finally, Inauguration Day. Mark Crispin Miller has repeatedly tried to puncture our illusionary balloon with warnings of another election theft and martial law. Quote, this is a regime whose leaders are capable of anything. They're capable of stealing elections. They're capable of lying us into a war. What is it that they would not do? And at this point, resistance is something that we should all be thinking about very seriously. End quote. I have one question. Historically, when have gangsters voluntarily given up power? Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and Mussolini were not voted out of office. We would like to believe that Americans will not stand for martial law or the suspension of elections or a war with Iran. That belief is based on what? The majority of Americans have accepted everything the Bush regime has done so far. We've done nothing about it. There is only the hope that somehow we will behave differently, that magically our American DNA makes us immune to totalitarianism. But historically, we have not shown that we are any different from the pre-war Germans. They stood by as Jews, gypsies, communists, and anybody else the Nazis wanted were rounded up. Would we act any differently under similar circumstances? We didn't. A friend of mine remembers when a Japanese family on his block was forcibly relocated to an internment camp. He went to school with one of the kids. I asked him what he or anyone did after the family disappeared into the camp. He said what I imagine the Germans answered when asked the same question. What could we do? This tipping point, what makes it all seem all the more ominous, is that we are not surprised by it. It is understood and expected that the crimes of the Bush regime will go largely unnoticed by the media and unprosecuted. We have 7.5 months from now to Inauguration Day. It doesn't take a Gene Dixon to predict that something is going to happen between now and then. But for most of us, we are not prepared if whatever happens is bad. Welcome to the tipping point. Another Moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Chef Boyardee, SpaghettiOs, and Alpo Dog Food. Well, as long as we're in that mood, let me share something from Lydia in Miami. Dear Mike, I was born in New York and brought up in Argentina, and I've been living in the USA for 20 years. I can't help to compare what is going on in this country with what went on in my second home, Argentina, in the 70s. As you know, Argentina was governed for many years by a military dictatorship, like Chile and most countries in South America during those years. We know that this was supported by the USA and that the military were trained on how to torture by the CIA. When the Argentinian people realized what was going on, 30,000 people had already disappeared and the country was bankrupt. I remember demonstrations every day of thousands of people, the mothers of the disappeared, demonstrating every day in front of the Casa Rosada and general strikes to show that we would not take it anymore. The first responsibility of the new democratic government and the people of Argentina would be to put all the military guilty of murders, torture, and the disappearance of so many innocent people on trial. We called it Nunca Más, never again. And we still, to this day, with the help of other countries like France and Spain, find them and prosecute them. Argentinians will never forget the horror of those years, the lack of freedom, the murders, the insanity, and will make sure that such abominations happen nunca más. What does it take for the American people to react? I'm very disillusioned by the people of this country who just go through life without caring or reacting to what this administration has done to us. Impeachment? Oh, please. It's not practical. That will never happen, they say. I have to admit that my only hope is when I listen to people like you, but I think we are just the minority. And the rest of the day, I come back to the sad reality that Americans deserve what they have. Lydia, Miami. You know, I keep thinking of the poet's comment, these are the times that try men's souls. I can't help it. That's my little pretend moment that I am hip to all the poets and the writers. All right, we'll be back after the break. Do stay with us. You're there, aren't you? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Back to this ruling today by the United States Supreme Court. You can look at this a number of ways. First of all, I think the court made clear today that never again, unless the balance on the Supreme Court tips into fascist land completely, never again will an act of Congress, no matter who supports it, Democrat or Republican, or an out-of-control executive branch, will be able to interpret the U.S. Constitution in a manner that is totally contradictory, not just to the intent of the Constitution, but to its written word. And that's the important part of this ruling today. What the court found was that this was not The intent of the Constitution, the spirit of the Constitution. This was the written word of the Constitution that was in violation by Bush and Cheney and the Republicans and more than a handful of these filthy, cowardly Democrats. As Michael Ratner, who is the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, said today, this may well mean the death knell of the Guantanamo prison camp. The Bush administration does not have the evidence to survive federal court challenges to the detentions, and what so-called evidence they may have is the product of torture and cruel treatment. In other words, it's inadmissible in a real court of law. So what does this leave the Bush crime family with where it concerns these detainees? Now, let's back up. Supposing that the rule of law would have applied from day one, the Bush crime family says, well, we've captured a leader. So you bring the leader to the United States where the crime occurred, and you charge the leader. And you charge the leader in the U.S. criminal courts with all the protections afforded to people who are charged under our laws. And if the charges hold up, then you indict the person, try them, and if the jury finds them guilty, convict them and sentence them. There are enough death penalties, federal crimes that call for the death penalty, that the bloodthirsty bastards in the Bush crime family could have gotten their executions. But no! These people have to prove that they are above, outside, beyond the law. And since George Bush has declared himself the decider, he will decide what is lawful, what is unlawful, what is rational, what is insane. The problem is he doesn't realize that everything he has said falls into the latter category, insanity. So that's where we are with this. Torture, rendition, military commissions, secret detentions, all of this Nazi goddamn garbage that these people have introduced into the United States of America, and the way we charge people, detain people, attempt to put people on trial has got to come to an end. As Michael Ratner says, we hope this decision is the beginning of that end. Now, it's one thing for us to not take to the streets. It's something else, again, to not just stop and sit down. It's something else, again, to allow our elections to be stolen. It's something else, again, to sit quietly while this constant chipping away, not with toothpicks, but with great big goddamn hammers and chisels at the U.S. Constitution. We're going to sit by and let this happen? Marjorie Cohn is president of the National Lawyers Guild. She said, Justice Kennedy wrote for the majority in the 5-4 decision, breaking the tie between the liberal and conservative justices. He wrote, security subsists, too, in fidelity to freedom's first principles. Chief among these are freedom from arbitrary and unlawful restraint and the personal liberty that is secured by adherence to the separation of powers. Within the Constitution's separation of power structure, few exercises of judicial power are as legitimate or as necessary as the responsibility to hear challenges to the authority of the executive to imprison a person. And, of course, the ruling comes too late for the 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 Guantanamo detainees who have committed suicide. Yeah, there is no hyperbole today when you hear constitutional scholars declare that this ruling by the United States Supreme Court today was one of the most important in the history of this republic. Thank God it finally occurred, because this should end completely any further activity on the part of the Bush administration that is extrajudicial or extra-constitutional. If someone is brought to justice, bring them to justice. If someone is accused of a crime, do we not have enough confidence in our system to convict the guilty? And if we convict someone who is not guilty, is our appeals process not sufficient to overturning that conviction? And if they are innocent, is our system not sufficient to freeing them? The answer to all of that is yes, goddammit, yes! And it makes no difference what the Bush crime family or Dick Cheney or the rest of these incipient neo-Nazis feel, think, or believe. This is still the United States of America. It is still a country that to some degree respects the rule of law. Bush and Cheney and the rest of these rat bastards to the contrary notwithstanding. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. It is about 7 minutes past the hour. Vince Bugliosi hasn't been a guest on a program I've hosted in, it seems like, forever. His new book is about charging George W. Bush with murder. Vince joins us now. Hell, I don't know where you are, Vince. Where are you calling from?
Los Angeles, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. It's been a long time. The last time you and I talked, I was working in Chicago, and you had just come out with a book about the, it was a brief book, but it was awfully powerful, about the decision by the Supreme Court.
Right. The betrayal of America, right.
But that's it. That was the one.
Right.
It was,
right.
And then, of course, in my library, I still have Helter Skelter.
Yeah. That goes way back to 1974.
Oh, my God. A different lifetime. Your new book, which I have to admit, the publisher did not get to me in time, but that's all right, because I am going to read it. Anything you write, I will read. The title itself, what are you? I mean, that pretty much says everything, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. There's no ambiguity there. In the book, Mike, the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder, I present what I believe to be an airtight legal case against Bush that proves beyond all reasonable doubt that he took this nation to war in Iraq on a lie, under false pretenses, and therefore, under the law, he is guilty of murder for the deaths of over 4,000 young American soldiers who have died so far in Iraq fighting his war. Interestingly enough, Mike, although millions of harsh, I guess billions of harsh, extremely critical have been said and written about George Bush in the last 7 years, up to now, other than talk, no one has done anything at all against George Bush. No impeachment, investigation of him. No one even talks about investigating him. But in my book, I put together a case against them that could result in his being prosecuted for first-degree murder in an American courtroom. I set forth the legal architecture for the case against him, the overwhelming evidence of his guilt, and the jurisdiction to prosecute him. I mean, I even set forth how I would cross-examine him if he took the witness stand at his trial with his anticipated answers. If justice, Mike, means anything in America, and if we're not going to forget about these 4,000 young American soldiers who are in their cold graves right now as I'm talking to you, and who came back from Bush's war in a box or a jar of ashes, I say we have no choice but to bring murder charges against George Bush. people are telling me, Mike, that they didn't think it was possible for them to have more contempt for George Bush than they already did, and they're reading the book, and to their surprise, their contempt has risen dramatically. I've even had people with high blood pressure saying they can't read more than 5 or 6 pages of the book because it gets them so angry they have to put it down. I don't like to see, Mike, you know my prosecutorial background.
Right.
I don't like to see anyone get away with murder, even one murder. O.J. Simpson got away with 2 murders, and I was so extremely angry I wrote a book, Outrage, The 5 Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder, shot up to number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list. So if I get that angry over someone getting 1 or 2 murders, you can imagine how I feel about George Bush getting away with thousands of murders.
You know, Vince, I'm assuming that most people know your background, and that may be an incorrect assumption. A lot of people, when they think of Charles Manson, it's just a name from somewhere
right.
back in the dim reaches
right.
of history. There's a whole new generation out there.
Right.
You were the chief prosecutor at L.A. County.
Well, I was a deputy district attorney.
I'm sorry, deputy
and
district attorney.
Prosecuted Manson. I had 105 out of 106 successful felony jury trial convictions, including 21 murder convictions without a loss. And in my writing career, as you may or may not know, there hasn't been any other true crime writer in America that has had more than one book that reached number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list, and I've had 3. And recently, there was a record-breaking 3rd Edgar Allan Poe Award for me for the best true crime book of the year for Reclaiming History. That's my book on the assassination of President Kennedy. It's presently being made into a 10-hour miniseries by Tom Hanks. So I have a background in the criminal law and
all right,
in prosecution.
Let me ask you this. How... again, I'm
right.
at a terrible disadvantage for
right.
not having read the book. How do you charge a sitting president with murder? Or are you content to wait until he leaves office?
No, you can't be prosecuted now. He has temporary immunity. But
right.
In the United States Constitution, and it goes all the way back to the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton in 1787, once he leaves office, he can be prosecuted for any crime he committed while he was in office. Nixon, when he resigned in 1974, there was a demand by many people to prosecute him for crimes like obstruction of justice, wiretapping, subornation of perjury. And then, of course, as you know, President Ford obviated all of that by granting him a pardon. But Bush, once he leaves office, he can be prosecuted for any crime he committed while in office. I'd like tonight, Mike, if we have time,
sure.
if we have time to get into some of the evidence, the irrefutable evidence against Bush, and also... how he's comported himself throughout the hell on earth he created in Iraq, smiling and having fun through it all. And there's also a story behind the book, Mike, that you may or may not be interested in. For the first time in my 30-year career as an author, my book has been completely blacked out by the national television and print media. They haven't succeeded. I'm on radio and by word of mouth. This coming Sunday, it'll be number 14 on the New York Times bestseller list. Now, that's not a high number for me, but my publisher is ecstatic about it. They say, Vince, come on. You've had no national coverage at all, and you're already number 14 on the New York Times bestseller list. But those are some of the things I'd like to talk about if we have time tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, I know how complicit in these murders, maybe collaborative, the national news media are. What have been the reasons given to you when your agents or your publisher has requested that you go on Good Morning America or some of these talk television shows?
Well, they'll call them and they'll say, oh yeah, Vince Bugliosi, we've had him on the show before, colorful guy, what's he got out? And then they mention the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. And there's silence, and they say, well, let me get back to you on this. This might be a tough one. I've never had trouble getting any of my books published, Mike. It's an automatic because of my background. I had 3 books, number 1, New York Times. I had a very, very difficult time even getting this book published to the point where I had to fly back east, knock on doors in New York City, and I was turned down by some of the major publishers there. It was very obvious they were just terrified of the book. They'd say things like this to me, Mr. Bugliosi, are you sure you want to publish this book? Even though they recognized the marketability of the book, they just were terrified. One of them put it in black and white, too hot to handle. Finally, I got a publisher over at Vanguard Press, a very courageous guy by the name of Roger Cooper, and he said, this story has to be told. Now we go down to the audio level. Never had any trouble with audio. That was an automatic. I didn't even talk about it. My agent would call me and tell me what audio company I was going to be with. We're reclaiming history with Simon & Schuster. He calls me this time. He says, Vince, I cannot get an audio company in America to put this on tape. But we finally brought in the British Broadcasting Company, and they have it on audio. There's a documentary, Mike, that's being made for the big screen based on my book. The producers could not raise one penny here in America. The money came in from Canada. And so far, I have yet to get on one major television show, and the print media is ignoring me. I used to start out my tour all the time, automatically, in New York City. You start on one of the morning shows, and you do national television, and you start traveling around the country. This time, I did not go to New York City, and I've only gone to one city, San Francisco, so far. But they're not going to succeed. This may sound presumptuous to you, but I'm telling you that I'm going after George Bush, and I'm not going to be satisfied until I see him in an American courtroom being tried for murder. Now,
that doesn't sound presumptuous, Vince. That sounds almost as a relief that somebody with your background in a courtroom is serious about this. I listen to Jonathan Turley. I listen to the various constitutional scholars who make the rounds of talk television, and I keep wondering when they are going to make a case, and as you have, and I just, you know, I might as well just wonder until hell freezes over. Vince, we have a break coming here in about 10 seconds. Let me put you on hold, and we'll. Oh, and by the way,
yes,
am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, G before L is silent.
Is Vince Bugliosi?
You did a good job. You're in Atlanta, right?
I am in Atlanta.
A woman in Atlanta years ago came up to me and said, I think she was serious, she said, are you Mr. Bela Lugosi? Now, that's the worst that's ever been pronounced.
We'll be back in a minute, Vince. Stay right where you are. We're talking with Vince Bugliosi, who would like to see George W. Bush, along with millions of us, put on trial for murder. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Hi, higher. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twitching like a finger on the trigger of a gun.
21 past the hour. We are talking with Vince Bugliosi, the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Let's do what you suggested, Vince. Make the case, and we have another break in about 5 minutes. Go ahead and make the case, part of the case against Bush.
Right. There's much evidence in my book against Bush. These are just a couple pieces of evidence. In George Bush's first speech to the nation, Mike, on Hussein in Iraq, October 7, 2002, Cincinnati, Ohio, he told the American people that Hussein was a great danger to our nation, either by Hussein attacking us with weapons of mass destruction or by his giving these weapons to a terrorist group to do so. Mm-hmm. He said that this attack could happen, quote, on any given day, unquote, meaning the threat was imminent. The only big problem for George Bush, and I don't see how he could get around it at his trial, is that on October the 1st, just 6 days earlier, the CIA sent Bush its 2002 National Intelligence Estimate, a classified, top-secret report that represented the consensus opinion of all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies on the issue of whether or not Hussein was an imminent threat. And on page 8 of the report, it clearly and unequivocally says, and by the way, what I'm about to tell you, to my knowledge, has never appeared in any major newspaper or magazine in America. Why? I do not know. The report clearly and unequivocally says that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country, that he would only be a threat to us if he feared that America was about to attack him. In other words, Hussein would only be a threat if he was forced to fight in self-defense. So we know then, not think, but know, that when George Bush told the nation on the evening of October the 7th, 2002, that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this nation. He was telling millions of unsuspecting Americans the exact opposite of what his own CIA was telling him. Mm-hmm. Now, even if we had nothing else at all, and there's so much more in my book, this alone shows that Bush took this nation to war on a terrible lie. And therefore, all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq were unlawful killings and therefore murdered. And it gets worse, Mike. October 4th, just 3 days after the October 1st, 2002 classified report, Bush and his people had the CIA issue an unclassified summary version of the classified report so they could release this unclassified version to Congress and the American people. Congress was just about to vote on October the 11th, as you know, on the resolution authorizing Bush to go to war.
Right.
This unclassified version, Mike, I'm going to use a term that I'm sure you've heard, came to be known as the White Paper.
Right.
And in this white paper that was shown to Congress and the American people, the conclusion of U.S. intelligence that Iraq was not an imminent threat to the security of this country was completely deleted. Every single one of these all-important words were taken out. So the question is, Mike, how evil, how perverse, how sick, mm-hmm. how criminal can Bush and his people be? Yet unbelievably, and there's no other adverb I can use, so far they've gotten away with all of this, and over 100,000 precious human beings are in their graves right now because of it. That's one very strong piece of evidence against Bush. I'll give you another. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you have prosecuted people who have committed a murder.
Oh, yes, many.
And based on that, I'm sure in prosecuting, in order to make a case in front of a jury or a judge, depending
right.
on the circumstances, you've had to understand to some degree or get inside to some degree the mind of a person who commits murder.
Right.
What would you think was inside the mind of someone like Bush? Isn't this true? In so many instances, in the criminal courts of the U.S., a murder is a result of a crime of passion, a crime of revenge, a monetary
right.
reward, some sort of weird conspiracy,
right.
Or psychosis. Why?
Well, okay, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, do you have any idea what would prompt George W. Bush to do something like this?
Well, for one thing, I think he's a very small man, a very defective human being, and I think he's virtually amoral. But basically, you're asking me what his motive was.
Mm-hmm.
I can't answer that question. I can tell you what he said his motive was very, very clearly. Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Therefore, he was an imminent threat to the security of this country. So we had to strike first in self-defense. Now, many people feel that that may not have been his motive. That's the motive he gave. You're asking me what was really on his alleged
right,
mind.
Right.
But let me tell you this. Motive is not an element of the corpus delicti of any crime. So prosecuting George Bush, the prosecutor would not have the burden of proving motive. I put people on death row without knowing why they did it. All I knew is that they murdered the victim. The victim was in his or her grave, and the defendant had no legal justification such as self-defense for the homicide. But
mm-hmm.
why Bush may have done this, I don't know. But whatever his reason was, it was no good, and he lied to the American public. I want
right.
to get back to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Vince, we've got to do another break here.
Okay, good.
If you can hold on, and
yeah,
then
appreciate
what we'll do is get back to the case that you make in the book
right.
for the prosecution of Bush for murder. So hold on. This is about... about a 6 minute break. So if you want to get up and go get a cup of coffee, you got plenty of time to do it. Stay with us. We're talking with Vince Bugliosi, the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
To argue over that, 'cause it's clearly just a bunch of BS to distract us from the facts. It's about oil.
It's about oil.
It's about greed.
It's about greed.
It's about rich white men getting richer. It's about fear.
It's about fear.
And control.
And control.
Of those barrels of black gold.
Texas tea.
Yeah, step up, folks, to another war when we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Put it in the headlines. I want to see it in big lights.
Dictatorship seem orderly. when one man makes all the decisions, there is no need for negotiation or compromise.
Well, that's certainly a good idea in a democratic republic, which is what we live in. We're talking with Vince Bugliosi, the author of Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. I don't know why I keep drawing a blank on that. It's so just self-explanatory. All right, some more information here. Continue, if you would, Vince, about how you, as a prosecutor, would lay out a case against this thug in a court of law.
Yeah, you've heard of the Downing Street memo. It got a lot of attention.
Right.
I can tell you right now that if I prosecuted Bush, that would be very weak evidence. I may offer it, but it's ambiguous, very weak. But there's another memo that received hardly any attention at all that is 100 times more powerful against George Bush. It's called the Manning memo.
The Manning memo?
Yeah. Hardly anyone knows about it, but it did get in the news very, very, very little, overlooked by virtually everyone. On January 31st, 2003, Mike, less than 2 months before Bush ordered the invasion of Iraq,
mm-hmm.
on the rationale that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and therefore he was an imminent threat, so we had to go in there and disarm him. Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met in the Oval Office with six of their top aides, including Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, David Manning, and, of course, Condoleezza Rice, the national security advisor for Bush, she was there too.
Mm-hmm.
After the meeting, Manning prepared a five-page memo stamped, quote, extremely sensitive, unquote, summarizing what was said at the meeting. And he wrote that Bush and Blair expressed their doubts that any weapons of mass destruction would ever be found in Iraq. And it gets much, much worse. He said that Bush was so worried about the failure of the UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that he talked about three possible ways, Manning wrote, to, quote, provoke a confrontation, unquote, with Hussein, one of which, Bush said, was to, quote, fly U-2 reconnaissance aircraft over Iraq, falsely painted in United Nations colors, and if Hussein fired on them, Bush said, he would be in violation of UN resolutions, and that would justify war. So Bush is telling the American people, telling the world, that Hussein is an imminent threat to the security of this country, so we have to strike first in self-defense. But behind closed doors, this small man, George Bush, was talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war. Now, I can tell you, Mike, under the law, the last person in the world whom someone acting in self-defense would try to provoke is the person he is in deathly fear of, the person who is about to kill him. If Bush actually felt that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, which was his main basis for going to war, at least that's what he said.
Right.
The thought of provoking Hussein into a war obviously would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. Now, I don't know if you're aware that what I just told you alone shows that George Bush took this nation to war on a lie, and therefore, like I said earlier, all the killings of American soldiers in Iraq were unlawful killings and hence murder. I was on Dennis Miller's show yesterday, and I said, Dennis, you played the part of Bush's defense attorney, and I put the Manning memo on. Well, I call Manning to the witness stand. What would be your response to that, other than trying to hide beneath the console table? And he was pretty quick, pretty sharp. He said, "I'd ask for a recess." There is no answer to this.
There's much more evidence
against him. I'm just giving you a taste of what's in this book, and it's spreading now by word of mouth because I'm not on national TV, but word of mouth. It's already become a bestseller. It's only been out for about 10 days.
Have you spoken, Vince, with any, I would assume they would have to be federal prosecutors that you know, that would have the courage or the intentional desire to see justice served to charge Bush once he's out of office?
Well, I'm no longer in law enforcement, but I can tell you this. It's a very good question, a very timely question. I'm going to be reaching out very, very soon, probably within about a week, to prosecutors throughout this country looking for a courageous prosecutor who has the clout. I don't have any clout because I'm not in law enforcement anymore, but who has the clout and who has the authority to go after George Bush. I'm sending them a copy of the book with a cover letter from me, asking them to read the book. And if they agree that the evidence of Bush's guilt is very, very clear and they have jurisdiction, I'm asking them to proceed against him, and I'm offering my services in any way that they see fit. Now, that would include all the way from being a consultant up to and including being appointed a special prosecutor. Let me tell you an interesting story.
Well, wait, just one more question here. What is to prevent Bush from issuing a blanket pardon to everyone in his administration before he leaves office who had anything whatsoever to do with the attack and occupation of Iraq?
He could do that, but there's one person, unfortunately, for the small man of privilege from Crawford, there's one man he cannot pardon under the Constitution, and that's himself.
George, oh, really?
Bush. Yeah. But he can pardon everyone else. You are correct. Yeah? He can pardon everyone else.
I thought pardon power was all-inclusive.
No, no.
No, really?
No, you cannot pardon yourself. One thing I want to talk about, because it really served as the emotional underpinning for my book, and it's the fact that throughout the hell on earth that Bush created in Iraq with over 100,000, and that's a very, very conservative figure.
Yeah,
there are figures as high as 650,000. With over 100,000 people dying horrible, violent deaths and hundreds of thousands of their survivors crying out hysterically and having terrible nightmares over what happened to their loved ones, George Bush has smiled through it all. In fact, if you see a photo of Bush and six or seven other people during the war smiling, mm-hmm. who has the biggest smile on his face? George Bush. And I got the photos in the book. The evidence is very clear that at the same time, young American soldiers who never had a chance to live out their dreams were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq, George Bush was having fun and enjoying life to the fullest. I'm talking about running, bicycling, joking with friends, slapping backs, dancing and swiveling his hips like Elvis to blaring music, eating his hot dogs mm-hmm. and blueberry pie, almost always appearing to be in the very best of good spirits. Now, I know the White House press people say that Bush takes the loss of American lives in the war hard, but that's pure moonshine, just cheap, worthless words. Mm-hmm. Suffering on one hand, Mike, and having fun, joking around, and enjoying life on the other are simply incompatible. They cannot coexist.
Well,
they are mutually exclusive.
We played a soundbite a couple of weeks ago on this program, Vince. You may have heard it. Not on this program.
Well, my wife listens to you every night. So,
oh, really?
But I'm so busy. I work around the clock. I don't have any computer, a cell phone.
Well, the soundbite was Bush talking about how he had, I believe it was an interview with who, Kathy? But he said he had given it with the Times of London, that he had given up golf as a way of showing solidarity with the families whose loved ones have died in his war. He said this.
Yeah, but he said he gave it up in 2003.
Right.
Let me read to you from August of 2005, and I have much, much more of this in the book.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the ranch, and he's riding his bicycle. He said he gave up golf, okay? This is
right.
a couple years later. Quote, he's riding his bicycle. There's a great sense of exhilaration, Bush said, riding a bike up a hill. It is fun. It brings out the child in you. I hope to be biking for a long time. I love the outdoors. Biking provides a sense of freedom. So, Mike, as thousands of humans were dying horrible deaths in Bush's hell in Iraq, at the very same time, far away at his ranch in Texas, he told reporters biking with him, listen to this, this is a chance for me to show you a little slice of heaven as far as I'm concerned. We don't. Your audience, Mike, doesn't have to believe what I'm saying about Bush. Bush himself has shown no hesitancy in saying things like this. Let me tell you some of the things that he said, and I want you to keep two things in mind as I tell you these things. Number one, the horror and the death and the screams and the sea of blood in Iraq. Keep that in your mind when I tell you what Bush said. Keep also in mind. See if you can imagine in your wildest imagination, Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon, saying things like this during their respective war. Here's George Bush. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. It's going to be a perfect day. I'm in a great mood. As recently as December of 2007, said, I'm feeling pretty good about life. Now, Mike, even if George Bush was only guilty of making an innocent mistake and taking this nation to war, not murder, as I firmly believe, with all of the death, horror, and suffering he has caused, what type of a monstrous individual is it who could be happy with his life?
Well, you get no argument from me on that. We've been talking about this since the invasion. I know you would like to get this man in front of a jury.
Right.
I know you would.
Right.
It's obvious. What is your sense of what the outcome is going to be with the crimes that Bush has committed. There have been world leaders who managed to escape any kind of accountability for decades. So many of them in South America, so many of them in Central Europe, some of them who finally have been hauled before these tribunals in The Hague. What is your real sense, Vince, of George Bush's chance of being found responsible and put on trial for what he's done?
Well, you've asked two questions, whether he would be, you know, successfully prosecuted. You implied that by your question. And would he ever be prosecuted?
Yeah, hold it right there, because once again, I got to take a break.
Okay, good.
So let me just put you on hold, and let's get the answer to those two questions when we come back. We're talking to Vince Bugliosi, who is the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
He's in the jailhouse now.
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 I told him once or twice.
10 before the hour, we're talking with Vince Bugliosi, the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. I've gotten a bunch of emails here, Vince, and we're not going to have time to get into them. I just want to let you know an awful lot of people are aware of your book, even with the media blackout, and they're very supportive of what you're doing.
I appreciate that.
Now, let's see, the two questions I asked you.
Yeah, the two questions. I'm going to answer the second one first, and it may sound a little boastful, but you're asking me a question. I have no option but to be candid with you.
Do it.
Whether he would or not he would be prosecuted successfully would be dependent almost entirely on whether the prosecutor was competent. The evidence is there, no question about it. The evidence against Simpson, my God, his blood was found at the murder scene,
right?
The victim's blood inside his car and home, and the verdict was not guilty. Now, I know the jury was bad, okay, but I wrote outrage. And I pointed out page after page, example after example, that as bad as that jury was, the prosecution was even worse. And I was pro-prosecution. And the reviews started coming in from the New York Times, LA Times, that I put the blame where it belonged on the prosecution. But I don't want to get into that. But what I'm telling you is this. If you have an incompetent prosecutor, this case could be lost. Ellen Dershowitz just told the documentarians that are doing the documentary in my book, he said, if there were a prosecutorial Hall of Fame, Vince Bugliosi would be the gatekeeper. Now, again, it sounds boastful, but I'm telling you that I'm extremely confident that I could convict this guy of first-degree murder, and then it would be up to the jury to decide what his punishment would be, one of the options being the imposition of the death penalty, two other options, life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. So I've offered my services to help in any way I can, but if you have an incompetent prosecutor, the case could be lost, but the evidence is there. Now, your first question, I'm going to be candid with you again. There may not be a high probability of Bush being prosecuted, but I definitely believe there is a substantial possibility that George Bush will, in fact, be prosecuted for murder as a direct result of this book. And the main reason I say this, Mike, is because of the great number of prosecutors in America I've established jurisdiction for in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Bush can be prosecuted for the crimes of murder and conspiracy to commit murder under both federal and state law. Federally, the prosecutor would only be the U.S. Attorney General in Washington, D.C., acting through his Department of Justice. Now, there are also 93 U.S. attorneys throughout the country, but it is very unlikely that they would bring criminal charges against Bush without the approval of their boss in Washington, D.C., the Attorney General. So realistically, on a federal level, we're only talking about one prosecutor, the U.S. Attorney General in Washington. But on a state level, I've established jurisdiction. I spent a great number of hours at the law library. I've established jurisdiction for the Attorney General in each of the 50 states, plus the hundreds upon hundreds of district attorneys in counties within these states to prosecute Bush for the murder of any soldier or soldiers from their state or county who died in Iraq fighting Bush's war. Now, with all of these prosecutors out there, probably close to 1,000 prosecutors, and with all the powerful evidence of Bush's guilt that I present in my book, it's not unreasonable to believe that at least one prosecutor in America, maybe many more, will be courageous enough to say, hey, this is the United States of America, and in America, no man is above the law.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence of George Bush's guilt is clear, so I'm going to go after him and bring about justice for the American people.
Well, the only fly in that ointment that I can see is the fact, or the possibility, I should say, that the next president, and hopefully it's not McCain, but the next president, say Obama, will issue a pardon.
That could happen.
Because Obama is on the record of saying he wants to go forward. He's tired of all this nonsense in Washington, although, in my opinion, so much of the nonsense has its origins in the Republican Party. But if Obama issues a pardon, that's it.
I agree with you. That's, I think, highly unlikely. It's one thing to pardon Nixon when the crimes involved was a second-rate burglary, obstruction of justice, a second-rate burglary, as opposed to this case here, where over 4,000 young American soldiers, most of them blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq, and they come back in a box, and the parents are told not to open the box because the contents, this is the military term, the contents are, quote, unviewable. Sometimes only a limb comes back, a body part. It's going to be much, much more difficult. There'll be much, much more opposition around the country to any subsequent president granting this guy, George Bush, a pardon. I want to tell you one quick little story.
Okay.
Because it illustrates the likelihood, not the likelihood, but the great possibility that he will be prosecuted. There's a lawyer back east, just spoke to him yesterday. Actually, I spoke to him earlier, but just yesterday I had this conversation with him. He said he's my biggest fan on the book, and he's selling the book everywhere, telling people to buy it. Anyway, here's what he told me. He told me, he said, Vince, he says, I live in a county where no soldier has lost his life. But I want to tell you this, Vince. If a soldier in this county that I live in, I'm not going to mention the county or his name.
Right.
If he dies, I'm going to run for DA. And if I become DA, I'm going to prosecute George Bush for murder. So what I'm telling you is that there may be someone listening right now that's going to law school and says, I agree with Bugliosi. This guy has got to pay for what he did about Bush. And after I get out, I want to become a DA someday or state attorney general. You know, there's no statute of limitations for the crime of murder.
That's
Pinochet
true.
Down in Chile, 33 years later, they brought murder charges against him.
Sure.
And as you know, the charges were aborted because he died. But what I'm telling you is this is a very real thing that we're talking about here. At this stage of my life, I don't have time for fanciful reveries. I'm very serious about going after Bush. Whether I succeed or not, I think he's going to hear that there's a guy out there that wants to put him behind bars and maybe a lot worse. Now, if he hears it, I'll give you 100% guarantee that the people around him will say, forget about it. Bugliosi's lost his marbles. Don't worry about it. There's nothing to it. They have to. What are they going to tell him?
Well,
to worry about?
Well, that may be. On the other hand, Vince, watch your back.
Well, I don't want to get into that.
Well, I know.
I don't want to get into that.
But you know, and I know, and everyone listening to this program knows, that's just an absolute requirement. Vince, we're flat out of time.
Okay. Mike, thanks for giving me the opportunity to reach people tonight.
Listen,
I'm being blacked out. I want to thank you very, very, very
much.
My
pleasure. My pleasure, Vince. I hope the book takes off, and I'm going to go to my P.O. box tomorrow and see if your publisher sent me a copy, okay?
Thanks a million, Mike.
Thanks,
Vince.
All right, take care, sir. Take care. Good luck. Vince Bugliosi, the name of the book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now. Realize.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Program note, Ben Spiliosi will be on Shelley and Anita Drobny's program on KPHX and the Nova M stream for a full hour on Sunday, July 27th. Their guest this week is Mark Crispin Miller. So don't miss either. That's noon Eastern time. So don't miss that. All right. He sounds like a prosecutor, doesn't he? Bugliosi. What an interesting idea. There's one thing about Bugliosi, I think that it comes through clearly in his presentation. And also, if you have read his books in the past, and if you know anything about his performance in a courtroom, this is a determined man. This is not somebody with whom you want to engage in a courtroom unless you are absolutely certain that you have a winning case. If there's any doubt, Bugliosi will make you a firm believer in the criminal justice system in the United States. There's no question about that. It would be awesome to see him prosecuting Bush. But I hope what he said is correct, that there might be a state's attorney or a county prosecutor or a district attorney somewhere who may read his book and decide this cannot pass. This man cannot go free without at least a trial. I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case. Now, as far as Bush being able or not being able to pardon himself, Kathy in Green Bay writes, Mike, Vince may be wrong about Bush being able to pardon himself. The Constitution places no restrictions on his power to do so. But he can't pardon himself or anyone else for state murder charges. The legal dictionary says, quote, the pardon to pardon applies only to offenses against the laws of the jurisdiction of which the pardoning official is the chief executive. Thus, the president may only pardon for violations of federal law, and governors may only pardon for violations of the laws of their states, end quote. Bush can issue pardons with respect to federal crimes, but he can't issue pardons for state crimes or for international war crimes. Gee, Kathy writes, I feel better already. So it is interesting to see. Interesting is the wrong word. It is painful to know that this rat bastard may get away with everything. And I'm sorry for not asking the questions that you emailed in. I tried to cover most of what was available given the time available, but no, I didn't get to your specific questions. It's very seldom that I have a guest, and I would rather do it as a straight Q&A between the guest and me. Not that I have better questions than you do, not at all, but I try to limit the questions because I'd rather hear what the guest has to say. If you are a regular listener to the program here, you know that. I'm not interested in showing my ability to answer questions I'm asking or my knowledge about the topic. What I try to do is just let the guest talk. All right. If you have some comments about the interview, bring them on, so to speak. 800-989-1480, or any other topic. There's one other thing I've got to drop into the mix here. And that is a report that is circulating now among various news services. I haven't seen it in the American media yet, and therefore probably never will. But this is from the IPS News Service, among others. It is in the British, I think, Sky News, which is owned by Murdoch in the UK. The Sky News version of this story is a little bit different from IPS, but the gist of the story is that babies being born in Fallujah in Iraq are showing illnesses and deformities on a scale never seen before. That's according to physicians and people in that blasted city. The new cases and the number of deaths among children have risen spectacularly after so-called special weaponry was used by the United States in the two massive bombing campaigns that occurred in that city in 2004. As IPS says, after denying it at first, the Pentagon admitted in November 2005 that white phosphorus, a restricted incendiary weapon, was used in Fallujah. In addition, depleted uranium munitions, which contain low-level radioactive waste, were used heavily in Fallujah. The Pentagon now admits to having used 1,200 tons of depleted uranium in Iraq thus far. What is that, a quarter of a million pounds? Many doctors, according to IPS, believe depleted uranium to be the cause of a severe increase in the incidence of cancer in Iraq, as well as among U.S. veterans who served in the 1991 Gulf War and through the current occupation. A teacher who lived through the two U.S. sieges of 2004 against Fallujah told IPS, quote, "We saw all the colors of the rainbow coming out of the exploding American shells and missiles. I saw bodies that turned into bones and coal right after they were exposed to bombs that we learned later to be phosphorus. The most worrying," this school teacher says, "is that many of our women have suffered loss of their babies and have had babies born with deformations, end quote. Another witness said, quote, "I had two children who had brain damage from birth. My husband has been detained by the Americans since November 2004, so I had to take the children around by myself to hospitals and private clinics. They died. I spent all our savings and borrowed a considerable amount of money." This woman said doctors told her that it was use of the restricted weapons that caused her children's brain damage and subsequent deaths. But then she adds, quote, "but none of the doctors had the courage to give me a written report," end quote. A pediatric doctor speaking on condition of anonymity told International Press Service, quote, "many babies are born with major congenital malformations. These infants include many with heart defects, cleft lip or palate, Down syndrome, and limb defects." This doctor added, quote, "I can say all kinds of problems related to toxic pollution took place in Fallujah after the November 2004 massacre," end quote. The article goes on to say that many doctors speak of similar cases in a similar pattern. The indications remain anecdotal in the absence of either a study or any available official records. The occupying force in Fallujah obviously is not going to allow a study, not until sometime in the future when United States troops have finally left, will anything be done as far as the epidemiological studies of this. The Fallujah General Hospital Administration, according to the article, was unwilling to give any statistics on deformed babies, but one doctor volunteered to speak on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals if seen to be critical of the administration. It doesn't say the Iraqi or the American administration. Quote, "maternal exposure to toxins and radioactive material can lead to miscarriage and frequent abortions, stillbirth, and congenital malformations. There have been many such cases, and the government did not move to contain the damage or present any assistance to the hospital whatsoever. These cases need intensive international efforts to provide the highest and most recent technologies that we will not have here in 100 years. End quote.
All in their path, will we ever learn? How many Iraqis forgot? gal in. On this endless killing spree, how many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids?
There's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
21 past the hour, just the suffix to the special weapons having fallout on babies in Fallujah, Iraq. A senior Iraqi health ministry official was quoting back in February as saying that the health sector in all of Iraq, but especially in Fallujah, is under what he termed great pressure because of the scores of doctors who've been killed, an exodus of medical personnel from that country, the poor medical infrastructure, and the shortage of medicines. Now, all of this goes on while these filthy, disgusting, criminal, corrupt U.S. corporations continue to suck off billions of dollars, steal billions of dollars. Jesus Christ. Sometimes I swear to God, I just. The official with the Iraq Health Ministry said, quote, "We are experiencing a big shortage of everything. We don't have enough specialist doctors and medicines, and most of the medical equipment is outdated. We used to get many spinal and head injuries, but were unable to do anything, as we didn't have enough specialists in medicines. Intravenous fluid, which is a simple thing, is not available." End quote. He said no new hospitals have been built since 1986. Oh, it just goes on. What the hell's the point? What Bush has done concerning Iraq is a war crime by any civilized nation's definition. It is a war crime. There is no question. There is no debate. What he did is a crime against humanity. It is by definition, by the definitions put out by the United Nations, by the Nuremberg Tribunal, by Human Rights Watch, by any organization that has tried to define and has succeeded in defining a war crime or a crime against humanity would without doubt include what George W. Bush and this administration has done in their definition. How can Nancy Pelosi say that impeachment is off the table? And if Barack Obama issues a blanket pardon when he takes office, or in any way impedes investigations of this Bush crime family, he doesn't have to participate. But if he issues a pardon, if he impedes an investigation, I will spend the next 4 years, if A, I'm alive, and B, I'm on this radio program, working to end his presidency. Either by arousing as much resistance to him that he doesn't get reelected. Well, I guess that's all I could do. But I swear, if Barack Obama stands in the breach and prevents justice from coming down on these pigs that have done what they've done in the past 8 years, I will do what I said, but I'll also realize truly, finally, deeply, at last, that this country is screwed. Let's go to your phone call. Stephen is calling from Oxnard, California, listening on Sirius. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay. Well, what I want to say is is it logical to say that Bush is going to be impeached? I mean, I think that there are some other more important issues that we need to focus on, like gas prices, like getting our troops out of Iraq. I think that those are a little bit more important, and this is kind of just a thing to push the attention away from those facts.
Well, consider this then. Because of what George W. Bush has done, all of these other programs, or all of these other problems have developed. Everything flows from the mismanagement and the criminal acts of George W. Bush. So, you know, it's like saying, you have blood running down your leg from an open pus-filled cancer on your thigh, so shouldn't you be sopping up the blood? That's the immediate problem. When the real problem is to go get your goddamn leg amputated. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do understand what you're saying.
Okay.
And I do totally agree. I think he should be impeached, definitely. But there's not enough time.
Don't forget, impeachment is not removal from office. It is not conviction. It is laying out a case. It is similar to an indictment in America's criminal courts. It lays out the reasons why this man or this woman or this person should be charged with a crime. It's up to the Senate to convict him. And you're right. And everyone who says there is probably not enough time to convict this bastard is right. But I would remind you, to take a look, go to Wikipedia or wherever you go, how much time passed between the impeachment of Bill Clinton and his being found not guilty after a Senate trial. And what was Bill Clinton doing during that time? If I remember, he was managing a war. He was trying to run the country. I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in.
Thanks, Mike.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's More of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, back to your phone calls. Jeremy is calling from California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I spoke to John Conyers' office, and they confirmed that Nancy Pelosi did threaten to his chair, if he went ahead with impeachment.
Yeah, we had something last night that alluded to that. I think something that several years ago that pretty much confirms what you're saying. And last night, that's exactly what I said. If he has been threatened and he sits there like some field hand and takes the threat and does nothing, then damn him all to hell. That means that he is a coward, and it means he has zero respect for the Constitution, and it means he can be intimidated by Nancy Pelosi. So if the story is true, then damn John Conyers.
Well, John Conyers' office actually confirmed it. I mean, I actually talked to him.
Well,
so.
then it's a closed case. It's a closed case. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate you checking in. And I mean that. I know Conyers has done a lot of good, and all of it gets flushed down the toilet. Every single thing that John Conyers has done that was good and positive and lovely and wonderful and in the interests of not just the constituents back in his district, but in the interests of the United States, is negated, is stopped cold, is trashed, in my opinion. If he is to be intimidated and refuses to honor, at this point in his career, his oath of office. This man took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. Nancy Pelosi, be goddamned. Nancy Pelosi does not exist. So if it's true, and I have no reason to believe that it is not, and John Conyers is allowing himself to be treated like a field hand, then damn John Conyers. Phil is calling from Baton Rouge, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how are you tonight? Thank you so much for having Mr. Bugliosi on. There has been a news blackout about this. We need to take this party down. To indict Bush has been, this man has been a smashing success with the policies of his policies for his base, the haves and the have-nots. What he has done is beyond the pale. We have to stomp out. We have to boomerang. We have to taekwondo or judo what Karl Rove puts out as poison and becoming a one-party system and stomp this party into the ground. I think that's what the cry for justice is. I think that's what Bugliosi warned about this in 2000 with None Dare Call It Treason.
Mm-hmm.
He sent a pamphlet out. He was so prescient.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what was going to happen. That would have changed history if people could have listened. There was a news blackout on that. Didn't hear a thing about it. I heard about it here in my town. I live in Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
We have a progressive radio station here. Vincent Bugliosi was interviewed this week. It was riveting, world-class interview. I got that because I know where to go look for it. If you want the truth, you have to go pay for Sirius to hear you, because it's not on. I can't find you anywhere but here.
Well, I hear you.
News blackout is not. I'm sorry. You should talk because I adore you. You are doing a great job. Keep it up. We have to really. This isn't revenge. This is justice.
This is
our whole heart and blood of democracy and the Constitution that we live. It's like if I walk into the 7-Eleven three blocks from my house here and pull a gun out and say, in the name of Jesus, give me your money, I'll go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
That's just reducing it to this son of a, you know, and I now please let you talk and ask me, because this has to happen, and I think it really will.
Yeah.
People are so angry. My Republican friends are furious with George Bush, but it's not about him. It's about the whole ideology.
Mm-hmm.
The whole ideology of raping, murdering capitalism. Nothing but profit. And you know, and people are fed up. They're just,
well,
you know,
I hope that's the case, Phil. I hope people are at the break point. I hope people are, no matter what their political persuasion happens to be, I hope people do start to come out of the ether. Maybe $5 a gallon gasoline and food shortages and disasters occurring in the country, natural disasters at a pace impossible to deal with because our National Guard troops are off fighting and occupying Iraq based on Bush's lies. I hope people come to the realization, Democrat and Republican, that this son of a bitch has single-handedly, okay, with the help of the circle of chicken hawks that surround him, has as a group, single-handedly, utterly, and almost completely destroyed this country and everything that it represents. Now, I understand the, you know, the hands in the background, the ones controlling the strings, that is this filthy little mad puppet George W. Bush, whether it's Dick Cheney or corporate America, I understand, but I'll tell you what, the time is going to come. I don't believe we're a nation of zombies. I don't believe we've given up. I believe we have been inoculated against our own anger. We've been inoculated against our own ability to say no this far and no further. But eventually, that inoculation wears off. When it hits, as Bob said in A Moment with Bob, when it hits the tipping point, then all hell's going to break loose. I would hope that this, that the people in this country have the ability to get rid of these sons of bitches, and I'm talking about anybody who aspires to office in this country who is a fraud, a fake, a liar, and a killer, like this group. I would hope that we have gotten to the point where we say to those people no. And if we see that an election has been stolen, we don't sit back and cluck our tongues and go, oh my, isn't that awful? What happened in Florida? What happened in Ohio? What happened in California? What happened in New York? No, that we rise up as a people, as a group, and bring this garbage to an end. Whatever it takes, what's at stake here is how this country is going to govern itself. We have to respond. Little correction here. I was talking about the 1,200 tons of depleted uranium dropped on Iraq, according to the Pentagon. And I said that 240,000 pounds is actually 2.4 million pounds of depleted uranium. Back to your phone calls. Bruce is calling from California, listening on the Internet. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
A couple things. First of all, I used to live in Los Angeles County when Vince was prosecuting the Manson case.
Right.
Excuse me, I was just swallowing something here. I just wanted to make a comment that Vince Bugliosi was never known to be a liberal.
He's not. Oh, hell no. Yeah.
I mean, I don't presume to speak for his political inclinations.
No, I asked him that 8 years ago, 9 years ago, the last time I interviewed him when I was in Chicago, and just to get it on the record, no, he is a conservative.
Yeah.
Now, he's not necessarily a Republican anymore, but he was strictly a conservative. And he writes from that point of view. This is a conservative who believes in the rule of law. I think it's that simple.
Yeah. I wanted to just bring that point up, you know, because I lived there. And one other thing, the other guy, Stephen from Oxnard, had to call, and he's just down the road. Hey, Stephen.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Appreciate
it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You too. Appreciate you checking in, Bruce. Email here from Roma. Hi, Mike. The U.S. assault on the city of Fallujah was in no uncertain terms a war crime of the worst magnitude. It sickens me that our military has been used in a manner reminiscent of the Waffen-SS of World War II notoriety. Not only was the captive civilian population subject to outlawed illegal munitions and toxic poisons, but additionally, snipers were used to take out anyone who dared to try to escape the ruins, up to and including children and women. The U.S. military has become an instrument for the corporatists and military-industrial complex. The brass has failed to adhere to their oath and have sold their souls forever, tarnishing the ideals, principles, and solemn pledge to defend the Constitution. How did it ever come to this? We were forewarned by the founding fathers and principled military leaders of yesteryear. As a former military officer, I am infuriated by the enormity of such actions and shamed by the continued lack of awareness of the American people. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Over and over again, my friend, I
10 before the hour, thanks to the crew, the usual gang of bandits and miscreants who brought this program to you tonight. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay. Don't forget the book, Vince Bugliosi's book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And if you have choices, buy it at your local independently owned bookstore. There are other ways to get it, I understand, but you got to support the independent bookstore owners, don't you? Back to your calls. Cash is calling from Laredo, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Cash.
Oh, hello. I thought you were saying goodbye for the night.
No, not yet. Not till we talk with you.
You know, I was just going to raise one point. I haven't spoken to you in a long time since we were in the mortgage crisis. I don't know if you recall that when you told me to call back sometime, but it's been a while.
Yeah, I do. I do remember because of your name, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah. I was just going to raise one point. You know, I haven't been a huge, you know, proponent of impeachment, but listening to you today and something did raise a point. You know, one of your callers indicated, you know, the old argument, you know, that there's other things to concern ourselves with, you know, the gas prices, et cetera. And I was thinking, who are they kidding? I mean, where have we been able to move forward with this president? And who are they fooling thinking that we're going to get anywhere with those issues with working with this president? So, you know, we've got a couple of months stuck with him left, and really there's nowhere to go with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even see who they're fooling and saying we've got other things to concern ourselves with. I don't see how we can concern ourselves with them. We can't get anywhere with them.
Well, Cash, immediately after that guy hung up, I got about six or seven emails that said essentially the same thing. And I think that he, and I don't want to, you know, bust up on him with him not on the call here.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I think he's like a lot of Americans who just doesn't understand. And this is the fault of media and it's the fault of those of us who don't have enough time to do the research ourselves. I have time because this is my business. But there's so many millions of people who just don't have the time, who rely on media. And media, especially television, are lying sons of bitches. They will say anything to make us not be aware of what the truth is. And I think that that caller falls into that category. And it's a shame. And it's sad. And you can make the argument that he has an obligation to keep himself informed. Because you do. I do. A lot of people do. But on the other hand, I think for a lot of us here in this country, and this is kind of the key, a lot of us here in this country can't seem to get it through our heads, Cash, that we have an administration that is capable of doing to us what this Bush crime family has done. That's the hard part.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The way you got me on this issue is it was something you said about if we don't do it now, then what do we allow happen over and over again? If we don't set the consequence here, if we don't hold somebody accountable, you know, what are we going to let happen? We've let this happen. My God, what, you know? So that's what really scares me.
Yeah, and it does me too. I don't know what it takes to activate the American public to really, really, really respond to what
John
these...
McCain,
yeah, well... But I mean, respond to what this criminal administration has done. I don't know what it takes. You know, I think about the insanity that was generated 10 years ago because it became public that Bill Clinton had a BJ in the Oval Office with one of his interns. And all of a sudden, it felt like the entire universe of this republic was about to collapse. I remember all of these filthy little Republican snot noses who was screaming, rule of law, because
Bill McCain was one of them.
Yeah, because Bill Clinton arguably committed perjury in order to cover up what he did that had nothing to do with the running of this country. And now, when you compare the two articles of impeachment leveled against Bush, 35 leveled, you know, how many people died because Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky got together and he violated his marriage vows? How many people died? How many people came home in bags, in boxes, in urns, young people who wore the uniform of this country because of what Bill Clinton did? Zero. That's how many.
Zero.
So,
zero. And we're
you know, if I live to be 1,000, which I won't, I will hate this filthy Republican Party to the very depths of my being for what it has done, what it has allowed to happen with their pig in office. I swear to God. Cash, I got to leave there, man. Listen,
you have a nice night.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Here we are at the end of the program, and I am so utterly, absolutely pissed off. You know, I think Bugliosi is right. You read his book, and you better have your blood pressure medicine handy, or a bottle of Jack Black, or a couple of joints, or whatever the hell you use. Maybe, you know, your exercise machine, something to work off the rage. Maybe deep breathing. Huh? Deep breathing. I've been teaching Molly to take 10 deep breaths at night. She's your typical almost four-year-old. She goes on absolute full force all day long. So Kathy reads her some stories at night, and then I lay down in bed with her, and we do 10 deep breaths. And I'll be damned if she hasn't picked up on it. And now I'm letting her do the counting. I did the counting until she realized, uh-oh, Pop is serious about this. So now she does the counting, 10 deep breaths, before she starts to go to sleep. That's, by God, what I'm going to do tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care, really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.